podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. In our lives, we're always looking for convenient, easy-to-remember ways to make things more accessible to us. We even do it with our phone numbers. You dial 411 and you can obtain the addresses and phone numbers of individuals and businesses entered in your phone directory. Dialing 211 will provide you information about various services like food, banks, and shelters in your community. 511 connects you to information about the Department of Transportation regarding traffic, road construction, and issues of mass transit. If you have a cell phone, you likely know that dialing 611 will provide you with immediate connection to your wireless service provider. If you're a person with a hearing or speech disability, you can dial 711 and contact a TRS communications assistant, and they'll facilitate the call for you with the other party. 811, well, that connects you with a health link where you can receive quick and easy advice from a registered nurse. And we all know about 911, and we all know why we'd call 911. It's to send the fire department or the police department and all other emergency services to you. But these 911 emergencies services span a wide range of issues, and often 911 becomes the go-to number when in doubt. It's kind of like that one drawer in your house where everything seems to get dumped. Well, our 911 go-to tendency has resulted in 911 responding to over 240 million calls per year. That's 600,000 calls per day. For those that are interested, that's 416 calls per minute. Now, a number of these calls are for appropriate emergency services, but there are some types of calls being made that present with a unique set of needs, a set of needs that would be best received and responded to by having their own three-digit number. This unique set of needs reflects those calls that are for suicide prevention and mental health crisis services. It's these mental health needs and the establishment of their own three-digit number that we're going to be talking about today. And with me to do so are U.S. Congressman Chris Stewart and Seth Moulton. Congressman Stewart is from Utah's 2nd Congressional District. He is a multiple New York Times bestselling and national award-winning author, a world record-setting Air Force pilot, and former owner and CEO of a small business. Congressman Moulton represents the 6th Congressional District of Massachusetts. He is a veteran Marine, having served four tours. He was named the most effective freshman Democrat in his first term and the only member of Congress to earn two Democracy Awards from the Congressional Management Foundation. Congressman, it is a real privilege to have you both with us today. Welcome to our show.
Thanks very much. Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, and it's great to be with Seth. I mean, this is an impressive member of Congress. And Seth, you and I are both military members. You were doing the hard work as a Marine down in the dirt and the blood and the violence. And my job was obviously easier being a pilot. But my gosh, Seth, your background, a Harvard graduate, you're way smarter than I am. So it's been such an honor to work with you, Seth. And thank you so much for your help as we've tried to move this 988 number, which both of us, I think, is very, very important.
Chris, as I say about my Harvard physics degree, for everybody in life who sees my resume and not my transcript, I sound really smart. So I guess you haven't seen my transcript. Chris, it's an honor to be here with you. And while you were setting world records up there in flying B-1, let me tell you, I wouldn't be here today if not for the air support that you and your brethren provided. So I am forever grateful. And when I hear a jet fly overhead, I still get this amazing feeling inside thinking, there's someone there to help. So thank you for your service. It's been an incredible partnership. And what a great story of what two veterans can get done despite all the partisanship in Congress today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that testimony right there. Congressman, you've both been directly involved in addressing the mental health crisis by establishing, being part of the establishment of mental health's own three-digit number. And this new bipartisan law dates back to 2019, is my understanding, with Congress directing the FCC to study the feasibility of creating this three-digit number for those in a mental health crisis. Would you walk us through, please, the history and the discussions that happened around this number being signed into law, and what role each of you played in this process?
Yeah, again, I'll give you a little bit of background, but before I do, I want to reemphasize, Doctor, what you said. This was a bipartisan effort. Could not have happened without people coming together from both sides. And it wasn't just a few or a few dozen, literally hundreds of co-sponsors. So and I'm very proud to say this is actually based on something that Utah did about 4 years ago, where they set up this initiative to have this hotline number, which is, you know, the problem is If you're in the middle of a mental health crisis and you live in Salt Lake City, there's a 1-800 number you could call. But first place, no one knows what it is. And despite the jingles and the advertising, the other things, it just isn't remembered. Second problem is it's different if you live in Salt Lake than it is if you live in Boston or if you live in Massachusetts or New York or California. And this initiative was to make a 988 number. And we didn't know it would be 988. We just were hoping for a three-digit number, something that would be easy to remember. You know, I think a couple things about this that are maybe worth mentioning. Once again, it was bipartisan. There wasn't any real opposition. I mean, some of the telecoms are a little worried we take their number 611 or a couple of things like that. But there wasn't this massive upswell of, you know, any special interest groups that oppose this. And it was bipartisan and not expensive. And yet, as Seth will tell you, it still took us 3 years to get it through Congress. And now a couple of years still to work through the FCC kind of mechanisms. But I think we really are at the end of this process now. This should begin to roll out in January. We'll go state by state. And we hope that a year from now, actually a little less from a year from now, everyone in the country begin to realize and begin to remember 988. If you are in the middle of a crisis, if you're worried about your kids, if you're worried about your spouse or a friend, someone you love, there is someone who can help you.
Really good. Seth, give us a little bit about some of the role that you played and some of the experiences you had in the creation of this number.
Sure. Well, I guess my journey to this really goes back to really the reason I ran for Congress in the first place. I didn't grow up in a political family or, you know, have any family money or anything like that. I mean, the first member of Congress that my parents met was me. So this is not sort of a likely career choice, not what I expected to do. But when I was on the ground in Iraq, I saw a lot of decisions being made by people in Washington who had no idea what was going on the ground. Yeah. Life or death decisions that affected our lives fighting in that war by people who were just really out of touch. And so when I got out of the Marines, long story short, I decided that if no one with that kind of background ever runs for Congress, this is never going to change. And so that's really fundamental to why I got into this in the first place. Now, I'm also not a mental health expert, or at least I really didn't have any connection to it until I had to come to terms with dealing with my own post-traumatic stress from the war. And a few years after I was elected to Congress, I made the decision, and it was a big decision, to actually share that story publicly. Mm-hmm. I thought it might end my congressional career because many politicians have been maligned for sharing or for being found out for dealing with mental health issues, even though we know that some of our greatest leaders, like Abraham Lincoln,
absolutely
dealt with mental health issues themselves. I mean, I think there's no question if you look at the writings of George H.W. Bush and John F. Kennedy and probably Ulysses Grant as well, they dealt with post-traumatic stress, but this wasn't something that they could ever talk about. But I decided to take a leap of faith and share my story. And it's been an incredible experience because it's opened up amazing wealth of stories from so many people near and far, from veterans all across the country, from people in my own community. I had no idea were struggling with their own mental health issues, but have started to seek help. And that's what we have to do.
Permission.
We just have to normalize it to get it,
that's right,
to make it easy and accessible to get help. And that's ultimately what this bill helps to do.
Yeah. I so appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable and transparent. I think that gives people the permission to acknowledge the things that are natural outcomes of very difficult situations that they get put in, or the situations that can be crisis in their lives in those moments.
Well, I always talk about post-traumatic stress instead of post-traumatic stress disorder, and we can have a nomenclature debate if you want, but that's because one of my best friends in the Marines who was in my platoon said to me once, you know, Seth, after what we saw, it would be a disorder if you weren't affected.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we get to say that's a normal reaction to abnormal situations. And then we get to manage that in some healthy ways. We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
I again respect your willingness to take that leap of faith, and I appreciate those that responded positively.
I just think Seth hit on a couple things that are so important. They need to be repeated or emphasized or maybe just personalized a little bit. And in regards to the mental health of our society, of one another, of the people around us, if I had had a conversation, say, 5 or 7 years ago, a group of 100 people and said, how many of you have dealt with suicide, had someone that, in your family, someone that you care about who's attempted suicide or God forbid, actually took their own life, you would watch the crowd kind of look around and, some of their eyes would drop and maybe a hand or two would come up, but many wouldn't. And the reality is we know that, I don't want to say everyone in America has, but most of us have dealt with this in one fashion or another. And that's one of the good things. And Seth brings it up and is an example of it, of the willingness to talk about it. And it's so important because if you are dealing with depression or anxiety or any other mental health issue that, is impacting your quality of life, many times you feel like you're alone.
That's right.
Or you feel like people just don't understand. And how can I describe this to someone? I mean, if your leg hurts, you can say, yeah, I've got pain here. If you're experiencing heart disease, you can, physically describe what is happening to your body. But with mental health, it's much harder and people are reluctant to do it. And that isolation, that sense that, well, no one will understand me or other people don't feel this way. That's what drives the crisis in many ways. And the willingness of our society to have more open conversations for very successful people like Seth and many others who are clearly successful in life, clearly happy and functioning, but who have said, as many of us have, hey, these are the challenges that I've had. I mean, I just think that's so important for people to look at models and examples and say, well, first, I'm not alone, and right. It doesn't have to be debilitating, and it doesn't have to lead to a tragic outcome.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. By the time we're done today, there'll be 5 people that have killed themselves in a suicide in this hour that we're talking today, 5, yeah. one every 11 minutes. So that brings it kind of close to home. And that's about the 10th leading cause of death. These are things that we can prevent. And these are things that, most people that I've dealt with that have, attempted say they don't want to die. They just want the pain to stop. It's just too much. And they are afraid, like you're saying, Congressman Stewart, that if I speak about it, people are going to, one, not understand, or two, something bad to me is going to happen, or the reaction I'm going to get is going to make it even worse. So there's a lot of fear, a lot of isolation, and that only makes it worse. You're also talking about something very unique too. Currently most states have police officers responding to mental health calls. And although they receive some mental health training, mental health is not their area of expertise. In fact, they said in between 2015 and 2020, 1 in 4 police shootings, sadly, involved a person with mental illness. And these types of 911 calls put our police force in a very difficult and unenviable position of having to resolve these problems that are outside their realm of training and their professional competence. And what I love about this bill and what you were just suggesting right there, what's impressive to me is that it's focused both on faster and simpler and easier to remember access to services, but it also ensures that the needs-based response is with a trained and experienced practitioner in the mental health field. Tell us more about what you're anticipating some of these responses being for the various crisis response services when someone will be dialing 988 and the access they'll have to these services. What are you looking to have them receive?
One of the beauties of this, Graham, is that the states are going to be able to design in many ways what yeah. is appropriate for them. And that's a beautiful thing in the sense that California may do it differently than, say, Utah does.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to learn from each other. We'll be able to see kind of some things that we can maybe model and then spread to other states as well. And the second thing I think that is worth mentioning, Doctor, again, to follow up on something you've already said, and that is the heavy burden that we've asked our law enforcement yeah. officers to carry many times without adequate training. And many times we know this, that just the presence of law enforcement with the uniform, with the weapons, the authority that they carry, many times just that itself aggravates the situation. And I love the idea, as Utah is doing, and I know other states are as well, of teaming law enforcement with social workers and people who are trained, who have a softer appearance about them, a softer presence, and can help to, in many cases, dampen the emotion rather than heighten the emotion. And I think that's a good example of where you're going to see different innovation in different communities. And it's going to allow us to see what really works and why it works and to adapt to make it better for others as well.
When you put it like that, there's a real crossroads moment where most mental health moments, crises, can be de-escalated. If we can just come into relationship with a person in that moment in a known and familiar way and begin to help them see from a very kind of myopic way that they're seeing things in that moment to kind of broaden the, hey, we got some choices here and I'm going to be alongside you in this process. Seth, say a little bit more about what Chris is building upon right here, please.
Chris is spot on. I sat down recently with the police department in my home city of Salem, Massachusetts, and just listening to them about the struggles that they have every day to do their job, they said mental health issues are their number one concern because there's not adequate resources out there to deal with folks. And so they all fall to them. And this will help because it will put professionals directly in touch with people who need that help. And you don't have to worry about remembering a number in the middle of the night. I mean, if you wake up and your house is on fire, you don't have to go find a phone book to figure out the number of the fire department. We all know it's 911. It should be just as simple if you wake up in the middle of the night and you or a loved one is having a mental health crisis. We should all know how to get help and be immediately connected with a professional. It will save lives. That saves taxpayer dollars at the end of the day. It's a good investment in our future. And it will hopefully just help start or help re-energize this conversation about mental health that, as Chris said, has started to come into the mainstream, but still isn't quite there yet. I mean, if I had to leave early from this podcast and say, well, I'm sorry, I've got to go get my annual physical, no one would bat an eye. You wouldn't say, oh my gosh, Seth, what's wrong with you? Yeah. But if I said, I've got to leave early to go to a mental health checkup, well, it would be a very different reaction, at least whether you said it or not. And we've got to get to a point in America where taking care of your mind is just the same, just as routine as taking care of your body. I think that not only our veterans were really the ones who inspired me in this effort, but some of our most elite military units are now practicing proactive mental health training, mindfulness and meditation, because it makes them better at their job. So if we take mental health care seriously, both to prevent the worst case outcomes like suicide, but also to proactively make our mind stronger, then we'll be a better, stronger country as a result.
Both sides of that coin, aren't there? One is to heal and one is to build resilience. And we can do those, you know, proactively, preemptively, and make us stronger at the things that we do. Folks, pardon the interruption, but we'll continue this discussion in our next show. I want to thank our guests, Congressman Stewart and Congressman Moulton, for appearing on our show today. For more information about the 988 Mental Health Hotline, please visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Or if you are in a crisis right now, please call 1-800-273-TALK-8255. And last, I want to thank our listeners for joining in today, and we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavior Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.